Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This piece was published on the 10th of November, sorry, the 11th of October, 2022, and is entitled Long Links. Hey everyone, welcome to autumn on the top half of the orb and spring on the bottom. For your pleasure and edification, another curation of long-form pieces that pleased and edified this semi-retired person, one or two of which might boost your morale in these trying times. Featured, Tolkien as lexicographer, Wikipedia versus Fox News, John Le Carré, and cheesy music from my youth. Let's start with useful news on the vexed climate catastrophe front, empirically grounded technology forecasts and the energy transition. That's a link. Outtake. We find that compared to continuing with a fossil fuel-based system, a rapid green energy transition is likely to result in trillions of net savings. We global warming activists have really missed a trick in not presenting it from day one as a major business opportunity. But those are just numbers and abstractions. The physical reality is complex and subtle and terrifying. You get a deep sense for it in The Alaskan Wilderness Reveals the Past and the Future from The Economist. I was fascinated by The Thorny Problem of Keeping the Internet's Time, in which no less than The New Yorker features NTP, the protocol and software by which any computer connected to the Internet knows the right time to within a tiny fraction of a second off what the best atomic clocks say. What's interesting here isn't NTP itself, but the people who've built and run it, and most of all, the way the world of geekery is presented in a prestigious publication addressed at intelligent, non-technical people. I send money to The New Yorker every month, and it's not because occasionally they glance at my profession, it's because of things like, this is a link, The Eggmen, which is about the people who make your breakfast in Vegas. Really, you want to read this. I will freely admit to having felt somewhat dislocated by the recent death of Her Majesty, a shiny distant presence as long as I've lived. Also, I find myself entirely unenchanted with my nation's nominal head of state being a king. In related news, check out On Maintaining Monarchical Succession by the estimable Eleanor Janega, who has appeared before in this space. Her narrative starts in the 1300s. Ever heard of Charles IV? That's a link. And then moves right along to September 2022. As I said at the top, entertaining and edifying stuff. I don't seem to be able to stay away from popular physics, and one reason is the work of Sabine Hossenfelder, who keeps publishing things that are too juicy not to link to. Here's a double dose. No one in physics dares say so, but the race to invent new particles is pointless. That's a link to The Guardian. And I've said it all before, but here we go again. Another link on her blog. The latter gets interestingly into science culture, in particular, the part of it that's mad at Dr. H about writing things like The Guardian piece, which accuses the particle physics community of being expensively off the rails. Returning readers may know my fanboy focus on the dark matter problem, best summarized as, the math says it should be there, but we can't find it, so are we looking in the wrong place, or do we need different math? I keep looking at the MOND, M-O-N-D, different gravity math alternative to the Lambda CDM, it's there, keep looking, standard model of cosmology. I freely confess that, first of all, I lack the education and smarts on which to base an opinion of my own, and second, that MOND appeals to me because I like plucky underdogs. But in fact, a large majority of actual professional physicists still think the dark matter is there and will find it eventually. In particular, two of my intellectual heroes, Katie Mack and Chanda Prescott Weinstein, have both recently made it clear that they're with the majority on this one, so maybe I should dial back that plucky underdog thing. In particular, I recommend Mrs. Max, this is a link, we've made a map of dark matter but still don't know what it is, and that's okay. Listen to a professional, not me. J.R.R. Tolkien is having a zeitgeist surge these days, thanks to the Rings of Power series, which I watched the season finale of earlier this evening. I'm glad they made it, but it sure could stand to move faster. Anyhow, this isn't about that. It's about Tolkien's use of certain English words. Turns out J.R.R. was once employed as an OED sub-editor, and if you don't know what OED stands for, you probably won't be that stimulated by, link, Wan, Dim, and Pale, the OED and Tolkien. That's a link from 2016. If you do know about and admire the OED, this will probably be pure brain candy. Disclosure, I know the author, former OED co-chief editor Ed Weiner, with whom I have occasionally shared adult beverages and other good times. Just an extra nice human being. The OED is a large text, and I guess that's a bit of a weak segue into another flavor of brain candy. How do you arrange for large chunks of text to occupy smaller areas of computer memory and network bandwidth? Link, large text compression benchmark, digs way into that issue and has numbers. The benchmark winner was a surprise to me. Let's do some politics. I would argue that Laurie Penny is perhaps the world's leading launcher, in English at least, of razor-sharp and funny polemics directed at those who deserve what they get. In the current British Conservative Party, she has been handed an extremely soft target, and I can't imagine anyone with even a basic understanding of the UK scene not laughing with pure pleasure at some of the chunks of bleeding flesh she rips out of, in, link, front row at the slow death of the Tory Party. It's personal and political, with an exquisite and ruthless sensitivity to British issues of class. Oh my goodness gracious, never get Ms. Penny mad at you. I can't resist a couple of outtakes. Quote, I was expecting Tories, and I don't mean ordinary people who happen, for reasons that presumably make sense to them, to vote Conservative. I mean professional Tories, people in the club. The difference does matter, because part of the way the scam works is by getting the rest of us to believe that there isn't one, that somehow we are all spiritually akin to the enforcement wing of the British class system. But the Tory Party is no longer a safe bet for anyone who either wants to work in government or wants their government to work. That means that the only people left on the flaming deck of this clown ship are some luckless political grifters who are too slow to make it to the lifeboats, or sheer raving ideologues. End of quote. Another little quote. The leader's speech, when it comes, is like watching someone commit ritual suicide with a cake fork on live television. End of quote. Let's stay politically attuned while we consider, link, Wikipedia's Fox News problem. A strongly enforced Wikipedia rule is that you can't put anything in without a citation from a reliable source. So the problem is, well, what exactly is a reliable source? Is Fox News one of those? Since Wikipedia has become central to the gathering and dissemination of humanity's knowledge, this is a very important subject. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a figure to reckon with, and much has been written about her, deservedly. Link, AOC's Fight for the Future, in GQ, probably won't deepen your understanding of her political program that much, but you'll get to know her better, and she's interesting. But the reason I'm linking here is that GQ means fashion photography, and the pictures here are beyond fabulous. It helps the AOC easy on the eyes and has first-rate fashion sense. In the 5.5 years I spent as an Amazon employee, I learned a whole lot about how to manage an organization. Bypassing the issue of whether you approve of Amazon or think we ought to take the ship up and nuke the site from orbit, or both, there is no doubt that it is a well-managed company. I thought maybe the most important management tool I learned was the Amazon six-pager. That's a link. Those documents occasionally take the form of a, quote, PR FAQ, unquote. If you want to learn about those, I recommend putting Amazon's PR FAQ to practice. That's a link. And PR/FAQ stands for Press Release/Frequently Asked Questions. To my listeners, I apologize that some machine just started firing in the background, but you know what? I think you can still hear me, so I'm not going to stop and retake later. Oh hey, I haven't touched on music yet. This installment is entirely music for old people like me. I was grazing on YouTube live concert videos when some quirk of the algorithm led me to, link, Supertramp Live in London 1977. At one point, I shared a student house with multiple Supertramp fans. It was never really my kind of music, but I enjoyed the composition and orchestration. Anyone whose musical memory reaches back to the 70s will remember some of these tunes with a smile. Back just before COVID, I wrote up, that's a link, how much I'd enjoyed Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets tour. Nick is Pink Floyd's drummer, and this tour covers the pre-Dark Side Floyd canon, which is a lot of very fine music. Anyhow, at the concert I attended, when they were about to play Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun, Nick cracked a joke about the guy he played a lot with, who was a wonderful songwriter but hogged the gong. On this tour, Nick gets to play the gong. Well, check out Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets, Set the Controls, Beacon Theatre, New York, with Roger Waters, from 2019. Nick tells a variation on the joke, where he talks about this wonderful songwriter who was a really great gong player. Then Roger Waters strolls on stage, sings Set the Controls very nicely, and yes, takes fiendish glee in hammering the hell out of the big gong. It's a fine performance! Yes, I know Roger Waters is a troll, but if I refuse to listen produced by unpleasant people, it'd make me very sad. Here's a treasure, The Unbearable Peace by John Le Carré in Granta. I have no idea when it was published, but it has a postscript by Le Carré dated 1991. It's a sad, beautiful story about a Swiss soldier you never heard of who became a spy for the Soviet Russians. And let's finish up by visiting Stuart Brand, one of the most interesting people in the world. Link, Life Goes On with Stuart Brand is just an interview in which he talks about what he's worked on and what he thinks about. I think reading it left me a little wiser. And that's all, folks.